Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. And there's Jason in Ohio.
Hey, hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Not bad.
I had a few questions. I emailed you, I'm not sure if you got it yet, but there's an H.G. Wells book that talked about the creation of sports culture.
Mm-hmm.
Which book was that in?
Oh, I can't remember if it was a companion to The Open Conspiracy. There was a whole slew of stuff. You got to understand, like just like today, by the way, H.G. Wells didn't do all this stuff on his own. He didn't just churn out books by himself. He had a building given to him by the Royal Institute of International Affairs and subsidized, too, by the Fabian Society. And he had a whole range of people working on different aspects and so on. So whenever you see an author churning out book after book after book, you know they're one of their boys, because humanly you can't do it. It's not possible. So, but anyway, he churned out a whole bunch at the same time as he did A Brief History of the World in two parts. And he churned out also the Open Conspiracy. Now there's a short edition and a long edition to the Open Conspiracy. I've seen the short edition. I haven't seen all that it's cut out of it, but I've seen a lot of stuff definitely is missing from it. And it's the same thing with the second edition of A Brief History of the World, you know. They put two volumes eventually, one, and it was abridged. So whenever you see abridged, you know they've taken a lot out of it. You have to get the original editions to get the whole thing. Because they were very open back in those days and what they were planning. It was even more far-fetched to the average person living then than it is today. Their plans would seem so far-fetched. But you have to go into the original books, and you will find them out there in used bookstores and even junk shops.
If you go to H.G. Yeah. Wells, and the book that you want is called The Open Conspiracy.
The Open Conspiracy, okay. There was one called Things to Come. That sounds pretty interesting.
Things to Come is good. It's done in a fictionalized form. The Open Conspiracy, he tells you the whole world agenda and how it's outlined and how he basically is all for it. He works for the people who are planning it and how they would use wars to bring it about and so on. And how they despised the common people at the bottom was very evident in his book. He also did two books on history. It's called Outline of History. The original versions were volume 1 and 2. The second edition, they put it both into one volume. But Outline of History, he goes through the races that are going to be eliminated because they won't fit into the New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
And even the lower class types that won't make it as well. He actually has the same list that Hitler had is pretty well there. There was one main difference in that Orwell said that those people amongst Judaism who'd risen to the top and acquired wealth over generations and held on to it would be allowed in, because by the Darwinian theory they'd proved they were fit to survive. But people who were considered, like the Irish, for instance, more agrarian types, people who were always fighting tyranny and would not come in, he wanted them eliminated completely. So he had a list of those who were to be eliminated.
Right, okay, so that one's Outline of History.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, Things to Come, I noticed, was in the nonfiction section.
Really?
Uh-huh. In the library, yeah.
Yeah, they've blurred the lines now between fiction and nonfiction.
Yeah, I guess so, hey? Now that it was so long ago, they just put it wherever.
The old books are well worth going into, and even Things to Come, he goes right through to a fictional scenario, a coming world war with Germany, who would win eventually, and the kind of society they hope to bring out at the end of it, a universal world government. He even mentioned the spraying in the skies in his book. Only it was to be done by the scientists of the air, the Freemasons of the air, he said, the Brotherhood. They'd spray the people into submission. There's a lot of real stuff in that particular book that has all come true, because it was based on the agenda, you see.
Yeah, I'd made a side note about that, actually. One of your other callers had talked about that. It had something about chemtrails in it.
Yes.
So, but thank you.
That's how fake everything is today. So getting back to, you know, George Bernard Shaw declaring what socialism was, it was for the, again, a technocratically run society, an expertly run society. Everything would be ruled by experts for efficiency's sake. And science would be a big, big part of it. That's what you saw in Things to Come, in the movie, the version of Things to Come of by H.G. Wells. You'd have the Freemasons of the air, the scientific elite would come across after this massively destructive war that destroyed nations as such, till you had little city-states or towns doing their own things. And the Freemasons of the air and their super advanced military machines would then gas them all and take over the world and unify the world with themselves at the top, running it all scientifically. And their offspring would be doing exactly the same kind of thing, but under the guise of what they call progressives, progressive nature of the system. They would always advance science. That would be the pinnacle of everything. And whoever science dictated, those all down, all the strata beneath them would have to go along with it. Bernard Shaw was more Bolshevik about it, where he said that. He says, we're not here to help you, meaning the peasantry. He says, you know, because you can do what they tell you, or you won't get food at all. But you have to work, by the way. You know, they weren't in there for charity in communism. You had to work. No work, no food, you know. So you had to work. And Shaw pretty well said the same kind of thing. So was H.G. Wells for the same kind of system. But Shaw was blatant about it, and that audio clip's still out there yet, a little video clip actually, where he says, yeah, you'll have to come to us and explain why we should keep you alive. Because the only reason you would be alive in communism-socialism is to serve the state, the system. You see? That's your purpose.
Hi folks, we're back, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. Talking about the mayhem as we go through this new change, big planned change across the world. We've been indoctrinated for years towards it, in fact, through movies, through newscasts on television, and through lots of other means of media. We constantly get updated and prepared for what's to come, in a sense, prepared always, so that it isn't so striking. We don't kind of rebel about it when it happens. But it reminds me of the book The Shape of Things to Come by H.G. Wells, and the movie they made about it too, an old black and white movie of Things to Come, where a small elite eventually rise and take over the whole planet, and they call themselves the Freemasonry of the Air at one point. And they bombed the whole planet with the peace bomb, peace gas it was called, to make everybody behave and to give up their arms and their nations. And then it jumps into the future where, interestingly enough, that the offspring of the same elite who ruled are still ruling, and they're the highest scientific class, the better gene types. And they keep changing things so quickly in society that the society down below, the big towers, start to rebel because they get so sick of the changes. One change after another, rapid changes, and they couldn't keep up. They couldn't get a stable society for one generation where things were much the same. It was just change, change, change. Well, that's pretty well how we're being trained right now. We're getting geared towards massive changes one after another. And the odd thing is, once you start adopting into the changes, it's much quicker and easier for the leaders to do to you, and it's much easier for you to go through them too, because you're going to lose your sense in the big rush as you're whisked through these changes. You lose your identity, you lose your personality, in a sense. You're depersonalized, and that hits a lot of people with depressions and things. So you hold on to who you are as we go through all these changes, regardless of how crazy society seems to be, and regardless of how crazy even the talk of those around you seems to be as they parrot the terms, the slogans, in fact, has been downloaded into them from the media and the news and through all the other means of entertainment, etc.
And they came out with a big agenda and how they did bring the world into a proper way of living where their betters would manage you. Exactly what H.G. Wells talked about. He was quite open about it. Anticipations and so on. in a modern utopia, things like that. He was completely out in the front with it. You'll do what you're told, you'll obey your betters, and they'd eventually sterilise the inferior types, as he called it, H.G. Wells. He said it was more humane. He said initially we thought we'd have to kill them, but we thought, no, it would be more humane to sterilise them, and they'll die off in that generation, and they won't be breeding any more of their own kind, basically, you know, the inferior types. That's been on the go. This is like the second century, this thing, you understand, we're into now. H.G. Wells was involved in this in the late 1800s, the latter part of that. He was picked up early, you see. And he proved to his masters then he'd be an awfully good propagandist, and they made him a star. With a lot of help, because lots of them out there really have an awful lot of help to make them a star. And some of them today, they're parading around in front of you, didn't invent anything at all. They're just businessmen, or the fronts for huge businesses. But they're made with stars from machinery. But maybe we should go back to one phase and one stage of the organization, or the front, or one of its arms, put it that way, of this organization that was running the world with all the socialistic terminology used at the very, very top. And also the eugenics departments were involved in it too, because it sees us all as a collective, you see. Different types of humans, or different layers of humans, right down to the bottom. And you're not an individual in it, you're just a mass in your own little, you know, your degree, your layer of it, basically. That's how you're seen by this group. And they see themselves as being scientific at the top. And you'll find as well that the H.G. Wells belonged to as a propagandist, as I've mentioned this before, in the early 20th century, even before the 20th century came along. He was pushing for free love when he was young in the 1800s. And as he was picked up and trained for his position, and he became a front person and a spokesperson for this revolutionary movement too, where they bring in a collectivist society. He said in a modern utopia, he wrote novels, in fact, fictional novels, but he also wrote a lot of non-fiction of how the world would be under the socialistic system and run by scientists, basically running it all on behalf of those at the top, the dominant minority who owned it all. And he said in a modern utopia, it was like a look into the future in his book and how it would be run. And he said that, of course, we still had the last of the old types, the inferior types of humans dying off. But rather than just kill them all, like they considered at one time through either methods of, well, I guess he was talking about ways of getting poisons into them or sterilizing them or whatever. But he said that was what they eventually decided to do, was to basically sterilize them all so they couldn't breed. And that was more humane, let them die off naturally rather than just kill them to get them out of the way. But he was a rather ruthless character and very dogmatic about it too, of how it must be this way. And he was all for the wars that were coming along, and he worked, again, just like a marketer at the time, drumming up terms to defame the enemy and the coming enemies, and he came up with the Hun, and used that in lots of their slogans against Germany at the time. Dehumanize the enemy, and it's easier to kill them as not being human. That's what you do.
H.G. Wells did mention in A Modern Utopia that he says, we weren't brutal about killing the people like some regimes. He says, we allow them to be sterilized along the way, live a life, and then die off. Then the whole gene pool, you see, of what they called the poverty gene was gone. And what they also mean by that, too, is that those that consisted of the working class are also gone. They don't need them anymore. Why do you need in a global society your own working class, when you've already decided and written all the treaties to give all the work and factories to China? You don't need your own working class. Back in the early 1900s, you'll find lots of books were printed, some fictional, some non-fictional, along the theme of world depopulation on behalf of the big ruling club that ran the likes of Britain, mainly the UK. And H.G. Wells is one of the propagandists for them. He wrote a lot of fiction and non-fiction along these particular lines of of elitism and eugenics and the right of a fit to rule the lesser. But one of his novels that he wrote was a semi-novel in a sense. It was really a plan. It was called A Modern Utopia. And he leads the reader through a journey into the future as it would be in once all this had been done, all the different parts of the accomplishments of getting the public to accept it, bringing the populations down, and even suggested in the book to, we don't just kill them off, he said, although there's mandatory abortion and so on, we don't just kill them off, he says, we sterilize them, it's more humane, and they gradually simply die off, all the useless type genes, the ones who didn't quite make the grid. And it takes you through a journey across the world in their modern utopia. Now remember, that was the early 1900s, and part of the theme then was always, as it is today, if we don't do this, then too many of the wrong people, will breed out of existence all those who have the right to rule, you see, and take all the resources from that few that really deemed it their world, so that being the better sorts and all that kind of stuff, the better types. And that was only one book of many, and he belonged to the Fabian Society. He was a spokesman and propagandist for the Fabian Society and the Royal Institute for International Affairs. These organizations still work today heavily in the front of the fight for their particular type of utopia.
Talking about the groups that would be allowed to survive at the top and those who wouldn't, and as I say, that H.G. Wells wrote a two-volume work, History of the World, Part 1 and 2, and in the first edition, he had it listed those groups who'd be allowed to survive and eventually join the Anglo-Saxon elite group on certain conditions. And the conditions were that they should have proven their special selective breeding by breeding the right partners over a period of at least 7 generations. That was very important to them. And he said they used to think it would have to be only Anglo-Saxon, but then they said that they looked around and saw other peoples who had also done similar types of special breeding. And he mentioned, number two, they would bring in the financiers from the Jewish race, but not all Jews. Most Jews don't specially select their mates, but the high aristocracy amongst them do. And then he went on to list the other peoples of other countries, including some of those in the Middle East as well, that hung on to special breeding and power and money for 7 generations and hadn't married commoners, as they said. So that became a criteria to belong to the club. And so as time went on, you start to accept the fact that they'd have to bring on other rulers from other nations as long as they followed the right criteria, and they would be allowed into this big global club and global society. So they've had that for quite a long time now. And what they're wiping out across the world are the littler, the smaller gang leaders who don't have those credentials. They don't have a history of special breeding for their 7 generations and the acquisition of power, which they've held on to for 7 generations. And we'll go to Joe from New York. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for taking my call. Well, my question had to do with a book that I feel lucky to have picked up over the weekend. It's The Outline of History. It was published in the 20s by H.G. Wells.
H.G. Wells, yeah. But it first came out in 2 sets, but his son finished off the last couple of chapters because Wells died in, I think, 48.
Right. And it's going to be quite an undertaking. It's a pretty thick book.
Yeah. But, he goes into eugenics there, and he also categorizes the superior races in a descending order and who will have to be eliminated. It's in that book. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to ask you to comment on. What should I be looking for in the book, and if there's a spin, and I'll take whatever comments you have left off the air, and again, keep up the good work.
Okay, thanks for calling. Yeah, H.G. Wells went through the agenda because he was in on the big think tanks that planned the whole century and into this century, and he talked about the new control system where everyone would be born and raised and trained for the specific type of work, rather than this competition style we have at the moment. It was just too inefficient. And he also had a descending order of superior types and inferior types that would never work in a new economic system, and they'd have to simply be eliminated. So he's quite ruthless in the book. If you get the earlier copies, they're better. They did alter some of the later abridged editions, but the first two came out separately, volumes 1 and 2, History of the World, Part 1 and 2, and then they amalgamated one into one volume, and it was abridged, so they cut a lot of the more arrogant statements out of it, and it was finished off by his son, who he had left himself with Pavlov, because that was the hero of Wells, the man who could do operant conditioning on animals and people, and his son learned the Pavlovian techniques, and then he came over to New York to work in universities there and implement the same techniques. So it's well worth getting a copy, a used copy, if you can.
And just to answer a question about what are Israel's most favored nations and races, actually. Darwin called them most favored races in his book, the ones who should survive into the future. Now, I don't know about the Japanese, but I know that H.G. Wells wrote a list out of the ones that he was taught at that time by the Fabian Society that he was a founder member of, and his boss was Lord Astor. And he mentioned that the different races that should go on into the future and the ones that should be eliminated, that those who cause trouble and wouldn't cooperate in this economic system and obey a sort of socialist master system would have to be eliminated. And he wrote a few down, that the Scots and the Irish and a few other ones were to be eliminated. He said that the Africans would also have to either mimic the white man, and those who could mimic the white man in economics would be allowed to survive. The rest would just have to perish. But the Japanese, I've never heard of the Japanese. I know John Stuart Mill was the first one to ever write this for the British Crown, a list of races that were desirable races with all their different characteristics and traits, the ones who should come into the future. And he was a top economist, as was his son. But they talked, a very similar list was put out by them, the H.G. Wells augmented. And they mentioned Jews in it too, as did Wells. And Wells said because of the various purges he'd had down through time, then the fittest of them had succeeded to come through and be very successful economically. So they would be saved as well. That was again mentioned by Charles Galton, cousin of Charles Darwin, who, if I remember, he talked to the Jewish Congress of Britain twice on two occasions, and he also said the same thing, that the Jews should actually be grateful for all their purges because it really killed off all the weak, as he called them, and allowed those with the most cunningness and the most ability to survive, so they were very, very successful. And so I guess he thought that was a good thing for all people to go through. So the Japanese, if they were possible to come through, would be because, once again, Americans and those who ruled Britain, I don't see the British people, those who ruled Britain, thought the Japanese were so obedient to a system. And that's what they like, is people who are obedient to a system without question. And they're very thorough, they have pride in their work, etc. So if they were to come through, I don't know about them, I haven't seen a list with their names on them, it'd be for that purpose only. They have a personal pride, a personal honour, and pride in their work. And they have a hierarchy system which they don't question at all. Much of a caste-type system, you might say, as far as the workplace goes. So that would be the only reason I could see for them coming in, too. China was to be picked because, again, they'd never really had individuality. It was never a thing in China to promote individualism. And they were very obedient first to emperors and empresses and then to the communist state. And the communist state now has been really applauded by the United Nations as a perfect example for the world to follow for the New World Order, where it's non-democratic, it's an orderly society, everybody obeys their bosses or else, and they're hard workers. They don't put their pride in it that the Japanese do whatsoever, But there's so many of them too that labor is cheap. That's why they picked China to be the manufacturer for the planet. This, the Council of Foreign Relations, Royal Institute for International Affairs, decided that back in the 1930s when it was still a third world country. Your money, tax money, and the World Trade Organization and all the treaties sent your factories over to China, for those who don't know.
You know, Lindsay Williams was saying, oh, we're devil-crossing the Arabs, but you were saying in your book, in the priory of Sion,
yeah.
Basically it's the Mohammedans, the British royal family, and the Jews that are part of the whole ring of power at the top. Is that correct?
Yeah, Wells goes into that, H.G. Wells, because even before him, but he copied the same system basically economists had drafted up before. When they were planning this new world for the 20th and 21st centuries, H.G. Wells drafted up a list of favored races, an idea that came from Darwin and himself, in fact. And favored races were those who were the most successful in society. And success meant rising above poverty, gaining lots of wealth and power and holding on to it. And so he drafted up a list of them, ones who would be brought through into the new system. And he mentioned that some of the British, not all of them, he was talking about the upper class, they would come through. Wealthy Jews would come through, those, he was talking about Rothschilds and so on, and he had to do that because that was one of his the guys who helped pay him. But anyway, he also had a list of people who would have to be eliminated because they kept rebelling, didn't like being dominated and so on, and it always caused trouble against invading armies down through history, and the Irish and the Scottish happened to be on that list as well. So were the American Indians. And if you go further back too, you'll find an economist in the 1700s who were writing about the Americas. They drafted up the same list for the Americas. The Indians would not come through. They would not adapt into this economic system. And Wells also said the same thing, that those blacks who could emulate the white man in economy, in economic ways, and success, they would be brought through, the rest would also be eliminated. So you have to adapt or die, which again is one of the primary tenets of Darwinism and evolution. Another thing I found too, and you've probably noticed, this pathocracy that runs the world, that basically gives us our ideas, our terminology, the phrases, the catchwords that people unwittingly start to parrot, they gave to the world the term conspiracy theory and conspiracy theorist, as though it's a brand new kind of hobby for crazy people. And you'll find even some hosts that will introduce me as a conspiracy theorist, even though I try and stick to the facts put out there and published by those big players at the top, the ones who have the power and have the money and the standing in their own class to bring about that which they write about. And apart from that, when you've read their books and you experience the changes they're talking about bringing on down through the years, you know they're doing it, of course. So there's no real theory about it. In fact, H.G. Wells, one of the propagandists for this whole movement and one of the founders of the Fabian Society, paid for by the British Secret Service, actually called one of his books The Open Conspiracy, one of his writings anyway. He said everything's out there if the public want to find it. And it's true enough, it's out there, it's just not highly publicized by the bestseller book clubs that get you interested in drama and the latest written porn, which they call, they used to call love stories, now they're calling them something else, romance stories. But they certainly won't publicise the fact that there are books out there where you can find so much information on this whole agenda.
Just going off again on a tangent tonight to show you how we can have a reality given to us, reinforced by school, again reinforced by all entertainment. There's nothing you can watch out there for entertainment that does not contain politically correct messages of how you should perceive a particular thing, object, person or whatever inside of it. And getting back to H.G. Wells, now H.G. Wells was picked out of school. He was a real people pleaser. He wanted to be up with the elite, but he was literally the son of a drunk who played professional cricket, that you hired in those days to play professional cricket, going around as an extra on the team. And his mother was a maid for a very wealthy family. So he despised the working people that he saw passing, going on the way to the factories every day. He was terrified of joining them. That was generally the worries of those who played upstairs, downstairs, and slept under the kitchen tables, the helping classes that they were called, for the elite. And he was picked out because of this insatiable desire to get up the ladder. And he was made a propagandist. He was picked out and he joined the Red School Tie class, it was called, Red School Tie for Revolution, picked out by Sir Thomas Huxley, the best friend of Charles Darwin. And he was personally coached by him and picked out to be a propagandist, eventually for the Fabian Society as a founder and also as a member of the Royal Institute for International Affairs, a private Bilderberger type organization, very big, very powerful, with the CFR, the American counterpart, actually it's his sister. But he talked about the coming New World Order in a book called The Open Conspiracy. And they tell partial truths. It was an open conspiracy. The data's there if you want to go into the old books written by bureaucrats and high-level civil servants who retire and write their biographies. But they don't tell you all the story, of course. It was open to an extent, but all the details were kept hidden from the public. But he did say that, he says, thousands will die fighting the New World Order. But he says it's inevitable that it will win. He also said in another book where he met the founder of, or the funder, I should say, the funder, maybe the founding funder of the Fabian Society, and it was the rich people who came over from New York to live in Britain called the Astors, and it was Lady Astor who invited him and many others to a party, and she said, "We can't fail." And she wasn't saying we can't fail, or my goodness sake. She was actually saying we can't fail because they had already the sciences of controlling the minds of millions of people. They already had made inroads into a world educational society at that time. And you condition one generation of people across the world, of children, into the same format, and really you've got them from then on. The same things that Lenin talked about. But it's an open conspiracy to an extent. He wrote again another book called A Modern Utopia. Well worth the read. Very boring, but worth the read, because he tells you how they get rid of all the useless eaters. Not by just killing them off like Lenin and Stalin did and the Nazis, but by sterilizing them and allowing them to live out their lives. So it was more humane, he thought. And the world would be a self-controlled world society. Everybody would have a function in it. There would be a particular class system with the samurais, of all people. The samurais, another name for the guardian class that Plato talked about. And that was his favorite book, by the way. Well, his favorite book was Plato's Republic. So there's nothing new under the sun. It's just that the public are always thought we're living on the cutting edge, and things like this have never happened before. That's what we think. That's what we're taught to think. And of course, the last thing they want you to know is, hey, you're just living through a script here.
From myself, Alan Ward. It's good night to meet your God or your God's goal with you.